I go into the pen there with a bottle of maybe 2 liters of colostrum and give them to the calf straight away. And I tend to leave the calf with the cow for maybe 12 to 18 hours, depending on what time the cow calves at, you know, before she goes to the parlour, and take away the calf, then put in the calf shed, and the calves get whole milk then. And the way it is here for the last few years, I haven't sold any calves off the farm under 21 days. So they get a good start here before they go on to their next home.
Hello and welcome to The Beef Edge, the Chagas Beef Podcast, for all your latest news, information and advice for Irish beef farmers. I'm Catherine Egan, and on this week's joint episode of the Beef and Dairy Edge Podcast, I'm joined with my colleague Emma Louise Coffey and dairy farmer Paul Delaney to discuss the importance of genetics in the dairy beef system to maximise performance and profitability. Emma Louise starts with Paul giving an overview of his system.
Cows are out at grass whenever they get a chance, but I would be trying to get out the cows during the day and keep them in at night at the moment. And to calving strong, we're 2/3 of the way through the calving, and touch wood, everything is going okay.
And when you talk about grazing conditions are difficult, I think everyone listening in can feel that pain. You know, you have to work harder this year to get cows out. A lot of rainfall. You mentioned 2/3 of cows have calved at this stage. We're on the last day of February. When did you start?
I started, I think, around the 3rd of February. So I did this when I started. I don't like starting in January because, look, usually you'd be inside a lot, and it does take a lot of feed to keep the cow conditions up. And the quicker you can get them to grass after calving, obviously the more milk they'll put in the jar, you know. So
that's, yeah, as you say, a no-brainer, you know, feeding cow silage versus spring grass. There's a huge difference in terms of the quality that you're dealing with there. In terms then, Paul, I suppose it's not just cows you're dealing with. What else is happening on farm?
Well, I have a beef enterprise also, and I do a bit of tillage on the farm as well.
And tell us about the beef enterprise. What does that look like?
I'd buy in store bulls and finish them. And I'd buy and some store heifers and graze them on the grass and finish them also.
And then in relation to the tillage?
Tillage, grow malt and barley and some winter wheat. That's what I have this year.
And previously, Paul, prior to starting into dairy, you had a beef suckler enterprise. What kind of system did you operate?
That's right, Catherine. I had a suckler cows. I used to run 55 suckler cows here and used to bring everything to beef. I killed the bulls under 16 months and I finished the heifers off the grass. I think they were between 16 and 20 months.
And now with the dairy system, what's your breeding policy? How has that changed?
Well, at the moment, what I'm doing, it just to make things handy for myself, I'm selling the Friesian bull calves off the farm, and also the continental calves. I'm selling them off the farm as well. And I'm keeping 24, 25 Friesian heifers, and I put them in calf. And then if I have surplus to sell, I'll sell them if I don't need them.
And what are you looking for when you're selecting bulls and straws for your system?
My system, well, I'm running a kind of a Holstein Friesian cow. Look, there would be something like the suckler cow I had to be kind of an easy cow to look at, you know, to be a good, strong cow. And when I'm selecting straws, I'd be, for the dairy end of things, I kind of go a bit on EBI and also work a bit on classification and go under milk recordings and stuff like that, you know, before I select the bulls. And last year was my first year to use sex semen. And I used it on cows. I didn't get a chance to put it on heifers because it didn't work out. But I was very, very happy with the results now. And it's given me confidence going forward to be more selective with the sex semen, and also to pick some other outcross bulls as well to try develop or improve me genetics on the herd. And also, I won't have to use, after building up the confidence with the sex semen, I won't have to use as many Friesian on me cows, Friesian bulls on me cows, so I'll be looking more on the continentals, on the remainder of the herd.
The criteria, Paul, for the cow that you put a sex straw into in 2023, can you tell us about that?
Well, in 2023, I got the sex semen straws late, so basically whatever cows were bulling on the day that got the straws, it's not the right way to do it, but it's just the way it happened last spring. But this spring, I hope to go on me milk recordings over last year, and me top, maybe top 35 to 40% of cows, I will use them to breed out of with the sex semen straws, and also other straws as well, other Frisian straws as well that are not sexed. There's maybe one or two new bulls, and the remainder of the herd then I'll put them to beef bulls.
And when you talk about the beef bull, you mentioned the word continental, and I guess, you know, there historically where you're producing calves for non-replacements, a lot of dairy farmers will go to the Angus or the Hereford with the idea of there's potentially easier calving relative to a continental. Can you tell us the type of beef bull you're using, and, you know, I suppose your experience of gestation length, calving difficulty from them?
Yeah, well, I've going on last year's records, there was three bulls I used on the continentals, and that was LM 2014, which was Limousine, and LM 5443, and I used a Belgian Blue as well, BB 4494, I think are the codes. Now, don't hold me to ransom on that, but I'd have no fear of working them bulls on the Frisian cows, because from my changeover to suckling to dairying, I couldn't get over how quick the Frisian cow calves when she starts calving. Towards a continental cow or suckler cow, be arsing around for 3 or 4 hours before they get a water bag out, and then they're up and down and up and down. Towards a Frisian cow, just puts out the water bag and she gets on with it. She puts out the calf. They're a serious cow to calf.
And that's an interesting comment. Why do you think it is the case? I mean, you're comparing two different types of cows. You know, I would suggest that potentially the calf that the dairy cow has grown is a slightly smaller animal, given that, you know, she herself is a smaller animal than your typical suckler cow. But can you, I suppose, give any real explanation from your experience on that?
I think the cows to open up naturally, they open up better, and they're kind of a fitter cow too to calf, and like they're not overly fat like where some sucklers would be. You know, when you be calving some suckler cows or suckler bred heifers, if you have to jack them sometimes, there seem to be a lot of fat deposit around their passageways, and you can see the bits of fat coming out in the afterbirth. And you don't seem to have that with the Frisian cow.
And that idea of assisting, like, you know, you have, you know, 2/3 of your herd calf now. Of the cows that are delivering continental calves, you know, are you assisting many of those in terms of, you know, the calving jack, or, you know, a little bit of a pull, or are they, you know, tending to do it themselves?
They're tending to do it themselves, because I would be putting the beef straws on, say, second calvers onwards. You know, my heifers would all get a Frisian straw or a Frisian bull to run with them. And today at Touchwood, I've had no problems. But when I'd be selecting the bulls, I'd divil it looking at their gestation length. You know, if the bulls are calving under just if there's a short gestation, then I tend to use those kind of bulls. And also, I prefer to have, if you look into the linear scoring on the bulls, I prefer to have a more musclier bull or more musclier bull than a skeleton, than a bone bull, because it's easier pull out a muscle calf out of a cow, because the muscle will give, if you know what I mean. But if you have a bony calf, the bone won't give. That's where you run into difficulties with calving. That's just my experience now over the years.
And you've touched on the gestation length point. Any concerns there in terms of the continental type calf that you're dealing with in the last number of years? Is it adding days onto the gestation?
Not adding on days in the particular ones I'm using, because I'm going by me ICBF report, my calving average is 364 days. So like they're not taking any effect on the herd that way.
So yeah, your cow is calving once every year. It's not falling into 13, 14 months.
Yeah. Now, what you will find, some of the Friesian calves that are in calf to the cow, some of them could calve 5 or 6 or maybe 10 days earlier than their calf, than their due date. But the Continentals, the more than likely would get, the worst case scenario could be a day or two over, but the majority of them are calving within 2 or 3 days of their date, of their calving date, sorry.
And Paul, in relation to the calves when they land on the ground, how are you managing those from once they're born until they're sold?
Well, basically, they get colostrum anyway, as quick as you can. You know, I go into the pen there with a bottle of maybe 2 litres of colostrum and give them to the calf straight away. And treat, it's navel cord with iodine. Now, I tend to leave the calf with the cow for maybe 12 to 18 hours, depending on what time the cow calves at, you know, before she goes to the parlour. And take away the calf, then put in the calf shed, and the calves get whole milk then, so to do. And the way it is here for the last few years, I haven't sold any calves off the farm under 21 days, so they get a good start here before they go on to their next home.
And how much milk are they getting every day up till the 21 days to when they're sold?
They'll be starting probably around 4 litres for 3 or 4 days, and then they're up to a gallon, and then probably beyond 6 litres a day before they leave here.
And have you a market for those calves, or what's your current sale for those calves?
Yeah, well, I do. I have two customers that are coming here since I started dairying, and one man is buying the Friesian bull calves off me, and the other man is buying Continentals. And if I have a few Continental surplus, then I go to the market.
And how important is it for you to have that repeat buyer coming back year on year versus time that you spend going to the mart?
It's vital. It's vital because, like, when you're in the middle of calving season, you can't afford, like, I'm a kind of a one-man operation. I have help at the weekends, all right. But you can't afford to be taking days away from the farm to go to the market to sell your calves, you know, and cows could be calving at home, you could lose a calf, you know, so that's it's vitally important to have that relationship with me buyers.
Are you a price setter, Paul, or a price taker with those two customers? What way does that relationship work on an annual basis?
Well, I would be keeping an eye on the market and what way it's going. And look, I wouldn't be trying to get the last euro out of my customers, because they're very important. I want them to come back to me next year, and I'm hoping to be selling them a good quality calf. And look, I try to be fair for both sides, for myself and for them.
That is the one of the reasons maybe that they keep coming back to you, that I suppose there's a good respect there. And, you know, as you say, you're not screwing them for the last euro, and you're providing a good quality animal. You know, it's interesting, no calf sold before 21 days of age. Maybe just to get some of your expertise, Catherine, if you don't mind, you know, take me as a farmer who's picking DBI bulls, you know, in the next 2-3 weeks to get them into the flask for the breeding. You know, are there any traits or targets that I should be looking at if I'm looking at DBI straws?
Yeah, I suppose, Emma Louise, you're really looking at the sub-indexes within the DBI. So for farmers looking at selecting sires that have a high DBI, that's not really enough. You're really looking at how that figure is being made up. So say for a farmer like Paul that has a Friesian cow herd, he should be looking at sires with a beef sub-index of plus 100 euro, and then looking at a carcass weight value in the sub-index of plus 10 kilo. Now, obviously, on a crossbred herd, that would be higher. Like Paul mentioned, farmers have their own requirements for their own herd, so they're picking probably on calving ease, and he mentioned the gestation length. And then based on that, you're looking at what sires in the DBI lie close to that 10 kilo carcass weight value in the sub-index. Now, even between breeds and within particular breeds, there can be huge variation in sires. So it is worthwhile just to take time, go through the list, what your requirements are for your herd, and then where they lie in within that 10 kilo carcass weight, and then prioritise those sires when you're selecting straws now.
And like from the beef farmer perspective, you know, when you're talking to farmers, or you're, you know, looking at I suppose activity in marts, are there popular breeds, popular markets in relation to specific calf breeds that are sold at marts, or, you know, that are are gaining good value, but they're not necessarily, you know, disrupting gestation length calving difficulty for the dairy farmer.
Yeah, well, I suppose, Emma-Louise, from the buyer's point of view, the popular calf really comes back to the price or the value of the calf, regardless of breed. So what the farmer is actually paying on the day when they're buying the calf, which calf is actually going to leave a better margin on the farm when they bring the calf through to finish. So for farmers that are buying calves, they're using the new commercial beef value tool, and that's really reflecting what profit those animals can bring into their dairy beef system. So it's really given farmers now that are buying calves extra confidence prior to what they had before, and they're looking at the CBV genetic value. So, you know, they can see it probably in the martering on the boards and also through the herd plus accounts. So really, calves that are coming into the ring or that they're buying from farm to farm that have a higher CBV will on average grow faster, be finished faster, and not eat as much per kilo live weight gained. So therefore, them calves are looking at probably a higher price versus calves with a lower CBV. And the farmer has the tool now that allows them to see what decisions they're making before they actually buy the calf. Because really looking at calves, every calf probably looks the same until they're actually brought on through to finish. So by using the CBV, it's given the buyer a better chance as to what that calf will be when they're finished on their farm. So I suppose, Paul, from your experience previously as a beef farmer and now moved into dairy as a dairy farmer, what do you think the wider impact for an improved dairy beef calves and the genetics of the farm of these calves on farms can have?
You want the calves to leave your farm, you know, I mean, in a good healthy condition and looking well. And also to the farmer that's buying them, you want him to make a profit as well, and you want him to get a good return, and you'd like to see them thriving well too, having a kind of a decent kill out. Also, like, we as dairy farmers kind of have to try push this a little more, because like the suckler herd numbers is dropping, and there's going to be more men probably might come down the road of buying calves and rearing them to beef, and we want to be producing the right calf that will tick all the boxes. And also, now I hate saying this, but as much as a lot of us don't really have much time for beef factories, like, I'm hearing reports of their boning halls giving out about the amount of meat they're taking off some of the carcasses. And if we have better beef calves going forward, they will in turn have more beef coming that they're able to bone off their carcasses. And then it's kind of a win-win sort of for everyone.
That's an interesting point, Paul. It's the next step along the ladder. You know, you sell a non-replacement calf from your farm to, you know, one of your two suppliers. And I suppose invariably within the next 2 years, that animal is hanging up in a factory and being processed. And, you know, it makes an awful lot of sense, you know, when you talk about the amount of meat. And it comes back to your point, Catherine, on the carcass value and the beef value that is associated with the animal and their potential to produce, I suppose, the valuable meat product. To sum up, Paul, you know, you're, I suppose, deep into, you know, producing a valuable beef animal, you know, and you're looking at, I suppose, exotic breeds in my mind in terms of the continentals. You know, maybe your top couple of tips for dairy farmers who are, I suppose, putting more attention towards DBI this year.
There's no harm in trying a handful, four or five, you know what I mean, and put them on kind of good, decent cows and see how you get on. Because, like, the as I say, the Friesian cows is a great cow to calve. And, like, Friesian bull calves at the moment, like, there's someone who's struggling to make €50 in the mart. And, like, if you can, like, the same amount of work goes into them as goes into a continental calf, and a continental calf can make 200. You know, so, like, it's about, we could put more money into our pockets and doing the same work, you know, and the straws are roughly the same price as well in the AI companies. So, like, I would strongly urge farmers to experiment just a handful even to see how they get on. And then if they grow a bit of confidence to get on well with the two or three or four, whatever they choose, to maybe double it up the following year or maybe more.
Thanks very much, Paul. Some great advice and interesting insights. And thanks very much, Emma Louise, also. Next, Joseph Dunphy from Grass Tin will give this week's grassland management tips.
So we're coming off the back of another very wet week with considerable rainfall, leaving grazing very difficult on Irish beef farms. However, we know at this time of the year, ground can dry out very quickly, so it's important to be flexible and ready to go grazing when the weather allows. The winter has been long and both silage stocks and slurry storage are coming under pressure, so grazing would be very much welcomed on Irish beef farms. The two key grazing messages for this week are, number one, the paddocks for you to target to start grazing, and number two, the priority animals for you to start grazing with. So number one, the paddocks for you to target are, firstly, start into paddocks with lower grass covers. So we're looking at covers between 500 and about 1,100 kilos of dry matter per hectare, or just in around two fistfuls of grass or less. These lower grass covers are better to tune animals back into grazing, and there'll also be faster regrowth and better quality there for the second rotation. Also, aim to start grazing in paddocks that are closer to the yard and have better infrastructure, so that if weather comes good for a week, you can get out grazing, but also that it's simple, that if you have one or two wet nights, that you can run animals back into the yard until weather clears up and then back out to grass again. Also, to start grazing paddocks that are your grazing paddocks, and when the animals, as we said, are tuned back into grazing, then move to your silage paddocks to get them clipped off before the latter part of March. And your priority animals that you should be starting with are your lighter animals or your growing animals, so your weanlings or your store cattle. It's easier to train these animals to graze, and they are lighter on the ground, especially during wetter weather.
You can catch up on all other shows and interviews from the Beef Edge podcast on the Chagas website at chagas.ie, or you can listen on Apple and Google Podcasts as well as Spotify. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe so you never miss a show. For all other updates from our beef programme, keep an eye on our Twitter and Facebook pages. Until next time, I'm Catherine Egan, and thanks for listening.